Let's open our Bibles to Proverbs. We'll be in chapter 2. I mentioned that we would go kind of rapidly through Proverbs, but I was mistaken. As of last week, anyway. We'll move a little faster maybe this week. We'll see how it goes. There's an old saying that everybody over the age of 40 is responsible for the condition of their own face. Now, plastic surgery can help, but that's a decision you make too. So what it means is something like this. You are who you are because of decisions you have made. Because of things that you've done. And there, you know, we get sort of a head start for the first 25 years of our lives. Doctors tell us our bodies are actually not supposed to be falling apart. They're supposed to be getting stronger for the first 25 years. But then along around 25, they start going the other direction. If you haven't learned any good habits by then, it's really not good news. And by the time you're 40, you are actually living in the decisions that you made when you were in your 20s. And in your 30s. Now, some of you are going, I didn't need to come here and hear this tonight. Ooh, bummer. But there's hope. Don't be discouraged. It is really true. It is true. Life is a responsible enterprise. It is something God has called us to share with Him, and He is a responsible person. He's a person who makes decisions. He's a person who lives with decisions. And we are created in His image. He created us to make decisions and to live with them, and He created us in a world where our decisions really do matter. This is not a rehearsal. Our decisions at every point along the line, the fabric of our lives, is altered by how we think, what we say, what we do, what we fantasize about, which eventually produces our actions, and so on. It's sobering. And that's why, in God's Word, He says, anybody who wants to listen to Me may acquire some wisdom. Because we live in a fallen world where wisdom is not the norm. But in His Word, He has given to us what we have come to know as wisdom literature. It's a genre. It's a type of literature in the Bible. It's separate and distinct. And perhaps the most outstanding example of it is, of course, the book of Proverbs. It is a book about wise living. It is a book about decision making. Wisdom in the Bible is essentially the ability to make decisions that will make your life work well. It is very practical. But it also has in it the concept of making decisions that bring you closer to God. Because when you are closer to God, believe it or not, your life does work well. It works better. And so they go together. It's not just, I want to have a successful life. It's, I want to have a successful life as God sees success. And so you see these two things in wisdom literature. And notably, powerfully, of course, in the book of Proverbs. Last week when we closed the service, I mentioned three things that Proverbs reminds us of, and I want to open this evening with the same things I closed with last week. So let me mention them again. First is this. Wisdom is an option. It is not a guarantee. And you must exercise the option. You say, well, I know the Lord, therefore my life must be on a wise course. Not necessarily. You know the beginning of wisdom if you know the Lord. But you can still make some really dumb decisions. It's an old saying. I think it's my old saying, actually, as the more I think about it. It's never too late to really screw your life up. That's my old saying, okay? And you know something? It's true. That is true. It's never too late to make a decision that'll really screw your life up. Take Samson, for instance. A lot of people don't know. We know Samson blew it. But often when you see, I was going to say photographs. If you've seen a photograph of Samson, I'd like to see it. But artists' renderings of Samson always picture him as substantially a young man. Actually, he was over 40 at the time that he sinned with Delilah and had already had a complete and successful career as a judge in Israel for over 20 years. That was when he blew it, after he'd already been successful. It's never too late to really screw your life up. So, wisdom is an option. It is not a guarantee. You may grow old and not grow wise. You may be increasing in years and not learning a thing, and still know the Lord. Just being a Christian will not make you wise. You must exercise the option. That's what wisdom literature is about. Now, it begins with coming to God. We know that. It says it in Proverbs and so many other places. But that's the beginning. Learning to think like the Lord, learning to feel like the Lord about every area of life. This is where wisdom really is, and it is here that we learn to make decisions that make life work. This is wisdom. So the first thing to note, wisdom is an option. It is not a guarantee, and we need to exercise the option. Many Christians do not. They go through their Christian lives not living in wisdom, and their lives show an awful lot of wreckage that really didn't need to be there. Secondly, and by the way, I'm not saying God doesn't use that wreckage, and I'm not saying God is not sovereign in a person's life. Understand that, please. God is sovereign, but there is a mystery in which he does allow us to make decisions, even as believers. So understand that. Here's the second thing. Life is a skill. It is not a ride, and we need to learn it. You don't just strap yourself into life and say, wahoo, let's see what happens. Life is a skill to be learned, and you find this constantly in the book of Proverbs. Well, actually, all through the Bible. You learn to do life well. And matter of fact, that's what maturity is all about. By the time you're in your middle years and in your later years, you should know yourself and the Lord and your life and the shape of your life well enough that you're skillful in the management of your life. Not just your money, but your life, your feelings, your desires, the things you do, the things you say. We should increase in that skill. It is not a ride. You're not on a roller coaster, although sometimes we feel like it's a roller coaster because there are things that happen to us that we hadn't planned on. Nevertheless, the skill of life is how to deal with those things when they come up. That's a skill. It's not a ride. We need to learn the skill. Don't let life happen to you. Don't let life just happen to you. Enough of that happens as it is. Enough life just happens to you as it is. Reach out, make some decisions that you know are good ones. Ask God for wisdom and move in a direction that is wise. Don't just let it happen. In a sense, make it happen. And I mean that in a faithful sense, not in a humanistic sense. Make a decision and make a good one. And here's the third thing that I closed with last week and want to open with this week. Faith is practical. It is not theoretical, or not simply theoretical. And that means we need to really live it. Faith is practical. You don't just warm the pews. You don't just sit in a chair and learn the songs and so on. Faith is real. Real faith is when you say, Lord, my heart, my soul, everything I have, everything I want belongs to you. Fill me with your Spirit and change anything about me that you want changed. And let me live for your glory. Take all the details of my life, Lord, and let me make decisions in all of these details that are in keeping with your wisdom and sovereignly undertake on my behalf, because everything I am belongs to you. You say, oh, well, that would be fine if you're in ministry, you know, vocational ministry, you're called into, or the mission field or something, you know, then of course you put everything on the line. No, not just when you get called into vocational ministry. All Christians are called to this. And this is what is such a radical change in people's lives. Sometimes in a Christian's life, they will go from being a nominal Christian to being an on-fire believer. And the difference is, an on-fire believer has put all on the altar for the Lord. They've said, Lord, whatever it takes. And they've made a decision that causes them some risk. And that's the way to live your Christian life. Because the Christian life, faith, real, genuine, vibrant, Holy Spirit faith in God, is a lifestyle. It's not just a theory. It's practical. In fact, I want you to turn back to a man who's so associated with the Proverbs, His name, of course, is Solomon. And I want you to look at his very first public prayer as king. It's in 1 Kings chapter 3, and you'll see what's being said here. You know, 1 Kings 3, further back in your Old Testament. This is a passage that spoke to my heart. I'll never forget when it did, 1 Kings 3. I was a freshman at Biola University, and I had recently recommitted my life to the Lord. And the Lord had done a marvelous turnaround in me. He really had. No one else knew right at first, but I did. I knew there was something different. And I remember coming across this, and I don't remember who it was that shared it with me. But in 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 6 to 9, Solomon, who was a young man facing a huge task, and a huge responsibility for his own life and for the life of the nation, prays to God. And the fellow that shared this with me, like I said, I don't remember exactly who it was, shared with me, he said, you know, you can make this your prayer, and God will honor it. You can actually make this your prayer and have it fit into your life, and God will honor it. And I thought, really? Well, look at the prayer and see what it has to say about wisdom, and then you can see why it connects so much with the book of Proverbs written so much by Solomon. Solomon said, "You have shown great loving kindness to your servant David, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you. And you have reserved for him this great grace, chesed, this loving kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day." Now Solomon is a young guy just taken over. "Now, O Lord, my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. Yet I am but a little child." You see the humility there? "I do not know how to go out or come in." And that was the Hebrew idiom. That was the Hebrew way of saying, "I don't know what I am doing." Incidentally, the illusion that you really know what you're doing stands in the way of so much real wisdom. And people who insist that they always know what they're doing and never admit that they need wisdom from God are, of all people, most to be pitied. And we'll see that in Proverbs. He says, "I am like a child. I am like a kid. Lord, I have more. I can't handle this life. You must do it. You must grant me the kind of wisdom only you have. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen. You have done a work to choose this nation, Israel. I don't know what to do with them. They're your people, a great people who cannot be numbered or counted for multitude." And here's the kicker. "So give your servant an understanding heart, a hearing heart, the ability to learn from you." That's what he's saying. Give me wisdom. That is what Solomon is praying for. Give me wisdom, Lord, because I don't have it. "An understanding heart to judge your people." Look at this. "To discern between good and evil," which is widely misunderstood. Huge numbers of people, even Christians, can't tell the difference between good and evil. Oh, they can on some things. But there's a lot of stuff you can tell by stuff that's in their life that they don't know the difference between good and evil on a lot of issues. He says, "Let me see the difference. Let me understand the difference between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" And how that translated into my life, because I wasn't a king, you know, and I didn't even know I'd be a pastor. But I knew that my life was more than I could handle. And I knew that I needed to say, "Lord, would you please give me wisdom?" And it has been a consistent prayer of mine. It's just a personal testimony, but it's been a consistent prayer of mine almost every day of my life since that time. And it's not that I've always made the right decisions. In fact, even Solomon, who was given by God supernatural wisdom, if you read the rest of this story, which is well worth reading, God says, "You asked for wisdom, I will give you everything. I will give you wisdom and everything else you didn't ask for that I know you want." An awesome, awesome answer that God gives to him. And yet even Solomon in his later years turned away from the wisdom he requested of God. So I'm not saying that when you ask for wisdom, that means every decision you'll ever make from then on is exactly the right one. It has not been so in my life. And yet on the other hand, it is still a valid prayer, and it is still a good prayer to say, "Lord, will you please give me wisdom? I don't want to move without your wisdom. I don't want to think, I don't want to feel without your wisdom." and to ask the Lord for it every day. In James chapter 1, verses 5 and following, it says, if you lack wisdom, ask the Lord. He will not upbraid you for it, but you better be sure you want it when you ask. You better be sure you want it. That's what he means when he says, ask without doubting. It doesn't mean wondering if you'll get it. He means wondering if you really want it. Because he doesn't just give his opinion to be mixed in with everybody else's opinion, and then you take the one you like best. If you come to him for wisdom, you have to be sure that's the really, really what you want, is to live for him. All of this to bring us to Proverbs. So let's go back to Proverbs chapter 2. And you can see why, really the key verse of Proverbs, which is 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and only fools despise wisdom and instruction. You can see where Solomon's wisdom really came from. So wisdom is an option. It is not a guarantee. We need to exercise it. Life is a skill, not a ride. We need to learn it. And faith is practical. It's not theoretical. We need to live it. And we need to take a page out of Solomon's early notebook and say, Lord, I can't handle my life. And that's the truth. I can't handle it by myself. Here it is. I'm giving it to you. Would you please give me the wisdom I need to manage it? Very gutsy living, this. This is not easy. This is not just going to church. This is committed life. But it's the kind of life that produces wisdom. So let's begin in chapter 2. And I've given some headings to chapters 2, 3, 4, and 5. I'll give them to you ahead of time. A Father's Advice, chapter 2. Chapter 3, Think Like the Lord. Chapter 4, Listen to Dad. Chapter 5, Control Your Hormones. Can't wait till we get there. Okay, chapter 2. My son, if you will receive my sayings and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom. Incline your heart to understanding. In other words, put some effort into learning what's right. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her, and he personifies wisdom, by the way, several times in the first 9 chapters. Wisdom is personified and put into the feminine because Sophia, that's the Greek word, and I know it was written in Hebrew, but the Greek word for wisdom is Sophia. It comes across beautifully in the using the feminine metaphor, okay? And that's what he does. He says, seek her. If you cry for discernment, if you lift your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver, most people seek silver pretty anxiously, and search for her as for hidden treasure, dig in, find the map that says treasure here, X marks the spot, get the shovel, follow the map, dig there, huh? You'll find her. Search for her as hidden treasure. Then you will discern first the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. Is that cool or what? First thing you're going to dig up is the fear of the Lord. You're going to find out that this is the beginning. So a lot of people say, well, I have a lot of wisdom. In fact, I write books about wisdom. And then you find out, and in their books, they don't talk about the fear of the Lord at all. Well, they dug in the wrong spot. Because what it says here is that if you really seek wisdom, the first thing you will find, and you will be able to know that you're on the right track, is it starts with the fear of the Lord. And anybody who says, I have found wisdom without God, has dug in the wrong spot. They may have found success in some other ways, but they have not found what God calls wisdom. And that's the only thing that matters, because we're going to die, and we're going to face God. So we want to start agreeing with him now. Does that not make sense? Okay, so a person who says, I've been digging in the wrong spot all this time, and then goes and sees God after they die, you just don't want to be that person. So he says, if you cry for discernment, you will find. You cry out to the Lord, he will give it to you. The very first page of it, we'll talk about the fear of the Lord. Verse 6, because the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright, and he is a shield to those who walk in integrity. It is about character, contrary to popular belief. Life is about character, and discipleship is about character much more than it's about giftedness, much more than it's about worldly success. It is about character. Notice the words that he uses, upright, integrity, guarding the paths of justice, and he preserves the way of his godly ones. Then, he says, when you find this out, and you begin to know the Lord, then you will discern righteousness and justice. These are very important words, which we don't have time to go into in depth, but they speak of discerning right from wrong and living, the word justice especially, means to live well. To live in a way that every day you make decisions that affect other people and bring about what is right, to simply do what is right. That's the word justice. And it involves how you treat people, it involves how you do business in all these areas. It's a powerful word. He says, what you'll discover is how to do this if you listen, he says. You will discern righteousness and justice, equity, and every good course. You will be able to tell what to do. Because wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Knowledge, real knowledge, will be pleasant to your soul. And you know, it really is. True knowledge of God is so pleasant to the soul. And sometimes we don't take that to heart. But it is. Do you remember when something was confusing you about the Lord, maybe after you came to the Lord, and then over a period of time, something clicked and you began to understand a piece of wisdom that eluded you earlier in your Christian life? How many have had that experience? Do you remember how good it felt to say, oh, wow, click, that makes sense. That's pleasing to the soul. And it's a pleasure in the soul that we do not pay attention to and that the world does not offer. There are pleasures, by the way, in God that the world knows nothing of. There are pleasures in the knowledge of God, just the knowledge of God. Not preaching about Him necessarily, just the knowledge, just to know something about Him and have it really sink into your soul is a pleasure that the world just has no concept of. And many Christians live a long time without even desiring it. But when you've got it, something clicks on the inside, and your walk with God deepens as a result. Wow. That's a pleasure. He says, and that's, by the way, the kind of pleasure that you really want. Wisdom will enter your heart. Knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will guard you, and understanding will watch over you, which, of course, they do. You see people making stupid decisions. They say, come on. Let's make some stupid decisions together. But you've got wisdom, so you say, no, I don't want to do that. Include me out. And they go on and they do stupid things, get hurt really bad, shoot themselves in the foot, and then you walk away without a limp because you weren't there. See, that's simple discernment. It is a guard. It is a complete guard. It's not legalism that guards you. It's wisdom that guards you. You know, legalism says thou shalt not do this or that or the other thing because you'll get in trouble for it. Wisdom says, if I do those things, they will not please God. Furthermore, they will hurt me. I don't want to do those things. And that's a guard to your soul. Incredible. Onward he goes. And he uses those same illustrations. Discretion will guard you, understanding will watch over you. And notice in verse 12, circle the word two. In verse 16, circle the word two. What will this discretion do to guard you? Well, verse 12, it will deliver you, or to deliver you, from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things. There are people who speak twisted stuff. If you know the wisdom of God, you're going to identify it, and you'll say, that guy's full of baloney. I'm not listening to him anymore. You'll just stay away from people who speak perverse, twisted things. From those who leave the paths of righteousness and walk in the ways of darkness, who delight in doing evil and rejoice in the perversity of evil. Those whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. By having God's wisdom, you'll simply be able to identify stuff like that. The funny thing is, you know, we take some of this for granted, but you know people. In fact, maybe you've been a person who in the past has taken really bad advice. Really bad advice. And you got in with people who were just blowing it constantly, and pretty soon you start thinking like they do, and pretty soon you start experiencing the same pain that they're experiencing. The same exact trauma that's in their life, you're experiencing it. Why? Well, because you're allowing yourself to be influenced by their thinking. He says, but if you stay straight with God, you're going to identify that as stupidity. And you'll say, don't want to do that. I'm out of here. After walking with the Lord for a while, you may have noticed that there were some things that used to appeal to you a great deal that don't appeal to you at all anymore. In fact, some places where you may have used to go for rest and fun and relaxation, you go back to those places and you go, this is gross. I don't like this anymore. You see what's happening? Wisdom is entering your soul. That's what's happening at that point. Now, there's another two. He says, also this wisdom not only will deliver you from bad company, it'll deliver you from sexual immorality. To deliver you from the strange woman. And that's just not strange women. That strange means a person in this concept, strange or alien, both refer to people outside the covenant, people who don't walk with God. And in this case, an immoral woman who seduces the young man from the adulteress who flatters with her words. And that's where it always starts, by the way. Sexuality starts with words. Thoughts first, then words, then actions. Flatters with her words. That leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. And her house sinks down to death and her tracks lead to the dead. Go down to the morgue. Go down to the morgue and ask him to pull out one of those cold steel drawers and look at the body of a person with a tag on their toe who died violently or of a loathsome illness as a result of sexual immorality. Check it out. That's what he's saying. He's saying, you want to see where this path leads? And on the surface, it sounds really fun, and it's very exciting. Sexual immorality, it's very exciting. Come this way, she says to the young man. Come this way. What she doesn't let on is that right around the corner is one of those cold steel drawers. Verse 19, and none who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of good men. You listen to me, he says. You take in wisdom. You will find other people who like wisdom too. And you'll walk in the path of good men, and you'll keep the paths of the righteous. And the upright will live in the land, and the blameless will remain in it. In other words, you will inherit what God has for you. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be uprooted from it. And that's absolutely true. And we saw this in Psalms, another form of wisdom literature, where it says, you know, you look at folks, they seem to be doing so good right now, and they're living a completely pagan, evil lives. You know it, and they know it. And they're saying, forget it, I'm going to go off, do whatever I want to do. Well, you're only seeing one thin slice of their life today. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. God says, let me tell you what will happen in the future. I see the beginning from the end, and I see the cold steel drawer with the body in it. And if you could see what I see, he says, you'd listen to what I have to say. People still don't listen. So he says to his son in this chapter, listen to me carefully, seek wisdom, put your mind on it, ask God for it, because when you get it, you will start to wake up. You will start to understand some things that other people do not understand in this world, and it will keep you out of bad company, and it will keep you away from sexual immorality, both of which will drive you straight to the grave. He says, you want to make wise decisions? Do it this way. Chapter 3, my son, do not forget my teaching. Let your heart keep my commandments. Length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. You listen to me and you'll have a much better life, he says. See the whole wisdom idea. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your... Who would let kindness and truth leave them? Anybody who's angry. Kindness and truth, both are casualties of anger. They are. And so this wise father says to his son, look, you're going to seek after wisdom? Let me give you a piece of advice. Do not stop being kind, even when life is lousy. Do not stop being kind. You bind that around your neck. Be gracious. Be kind and truthful. Why? Well, because God is, and you want to think like he does. And it is the right decision. There's so many things that would tempt us not to be kind and truthful. Just write them on the tablet of your heart. You'll find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Trust the Lord with all your heart. So kindness and trust. Trust the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding, meaning on your own understanding alone. In all your ways, acknowledge him. That means let him be the Lord of every detail, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. And by the way, those two always go together, and you can tell who fears the Lord and who doesn't. 1 John makes it very clear. If you walk with God, you turn away from evil. If you're not turning away from evil, you're not walking with God. Period. End of conversation. So you can always tell. 1 John says you can tell the people who belong to God and the people who don't. People who don't are doing evil stuff. They dink with it, they flirt with it, they hang around with it, and people who walk with God don't. And so he says, if you come across a person who says they're walking with God, but they're flirting with evil, chances are they're kidding themselves. Fear the Lord. Turn away from evil. It'll be a healing to your body. It'll be refreshment to your bones. I'll never forget when I first felt a complete freedom from some of the rank things I used to do when I was a kid before I came to the Lord. And it came slowly. I didn't notice it all at first. But after walking with God for a couple of years, I suddenly realized that over a period of time, I'd start to feel so much better about who I was, about where I was going, about everything in my life. My, quote, low self-esteem had changed completely. It was a refreshment in healing. And that's what happens when you walk with God. Verse 9, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so that your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. There's a principle in both Testaments, a principle. And on the New Testament, it's not a law. Giving is not a law with a curse attached as it is in the Old. But the principle of giving to God and Him saying, if you honor me, I will honor you, that principle is constant in both Testaments among all people who walk with God. He says, do that. And also, my son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe His reproof. If the Lord disciplines you, do not resist it. Let it happen. For the Lord loves, whom the Lord loves, He reproves, even as a father the son in whom He delights. This is quoted directly in Hebrews 12, and we'll see it on Sunday morning when we get to Hebrews in the weeks to come. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding, for its profit is better than the profits of silver and its gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. We sing a song in which we find that exact line. Nothing I desire compares with you. Her ways are pleasant. All her paths are peace. She's a tree of life to those who take hold of her. Happy are those who hold her fast. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding He established the heavens. By His knowledge the deeps were broken up and the skies drip with dew. My son, let them not depart from your sight. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so that they will be a life to your soul and adornment to your neck. And you will walk in your way securely. Your foot will not stumble. And when you lie down, you won't be afraid. And when you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. By the way, that was another thing that happened when I began walking with God. I began to sleep better. Now, I don't know how that works, and I'm not saying that Christians never have insomnia, because there's a lot of different reasons for it. But I have known times in my life when I went to sleep, my mind was racked with disturbing thoughts. You know, in fact, sometimes when I have gone to a movie that was godless and wasted a bunch of money watching something that was stupid and perverse, honestly. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it was a X-rated movie, but there's a lot of PG movies are just plain stupid. And you come back from it and you think to yourself, I want my money back. I should have walked out in the first 10 minutes. Huh? Interesting how when you go home and you go to sleep, you don't sleep all that well. At least I don't. On the other hand, you spend time with some Christians in just, even if it's not in a churchy atmosphere, you're just having good fellowship, you're just having a good time together. There is a relaxation in the soul. You go home, there's a sense of peace and sweetness about it. You go back home after church, for instance. There's like this sense of, oh, wow, cool. Just drift right off to sleep. It's an interesting thing. Now, some of you are drifting right off to sleep right now, but you're supposed to wait until after, okay? But I know it's probably because you have peace in your soul, you see, and it's the soothing voice. Someone actually told me that. They said my voice puts them to sleep, and I thought, well, thanks. They actually go to sleep listening to a tape. Verse 25, don't be afraid of sudden fear, nor of the onslaught of the wicked when it comes. The Lord will be your confidence, and He will keep your He will keep your foot from being caught. There's a sense of confidence comes with knowing that you're walking with God, knowing that you're making good decisions, at least to the best of your ability, and trusting in the grace of God. There's a peace in that. Do not withhold good. Now he moves into a new piece of advice. Don't withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to give it or to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back tomorrow, I will give it, when you have it with you. And isn't that interesting? It goes right along with the kindness and the generosity thing. So if you have the ability to help a person, and by the way, it says in the New American here, to whom it is due. In Hebrew, it means that it really is morally right to offer this to this. Sometimes people ask for things for whom it's not morally right to give it to them. But he's talking about a real situation where you know it's the right thing, and you know, have you ever been able to do something and just something inside of you says, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to help them. Okay, piece of advice? Don't listen to the little, no, voice. And step out in faith and do what God tells you to do. He says, because that will help. And furthermore, verse 29, don't devise harm against your neighbor while he lives in security beside you. Do not contend with a man without cause if he's done you no harm. I have watched people fighting over a back fence, over 6 inches worth of property that a fence line was on. 6 inches, and I saw them screaming and ranting and raving at each other. And honest and truly, it was just 2 or 3 years ago. I saw these people screaming. I said, what in the world's going on? It was 6 inches that this fence was out. Now, we're talking people with several acres on either side, okay? So, you know, when you multiply the 6 inches and everything, you know, is this really worth a big, huge fight, 6 inches on a fence line? Devising evil against each other over the back fence. I'll get him. Verse 30, don't contend with a man without cause. And a lot of times the contentions we have are without real cause. If he's done you no harm. Verse 31, do not envy a man of violence. Do not choose any of his ways. Because the crooked man is an abomination of the Lord, for the Lord is intimate with the upright. Don't envy a man of violence. And it's interesting because sometimes we do envy people of violence. Many of the heroes that we see in the movies, again using movies and entertainment, many of the heroes we see are actually people of tremendous violence. And we have to ask ourselves, I wonder if this is really a good mentor. Oh, yeah, but he's a good guy, you know, and he's doing what's right. I know, but he's like killed several thousand people in this movie. Don't choose any of their ways. Keep yourself out of that situation. Verse 33. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. Though he scoffs at the scoffer, yet he gives grace to the afflicted. The wise will inherit honor, but the fools display dishonor. He scoffs at the scoffer. Remember I told you last week, the word scoff means to make a face. So you got people who make faces at God's wisdom. It's like, you know, these ugly little face. Make a face behind somebody's back. That's what that word, that's what it referred to, a face maker. And you know what? God does it. Right back to them. They go, and they don't see him, but he goes, scoffs right back at him. Except when he scoffs, that's bad news for the guy who's being scoffed, isn't it? I mean, you don't want to have God go, don't you point your finger at me, says the Lord. See, as long as the Lord's invisible, we think we can get away with anything, but he is there, and we will face him. And he says, I do scoff at the scoffers. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father. Give attention that you may gain understanding. This is chapter 4. Listen to dad. Give an ear to your father's instruction. I give you sound teaching. Don't abandon my instruction. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments. Now listen carefully. He says, get wisdom. Get wisdom. Acquire understanding. Do not forget. Don't turn away from the words of my mouth. Listen. This guy is desperate. This is a man who's saying, you have got to listen to me. I remember it was a friend of mine who served a generation ago with a famous guy, a famous minister, whose name I won't mention. But this minister he met in his later years when he kind of got a little crotchety. The minister did, this famous guy. And this young guy, this other friend who was young at the time and was driving him around, he was a chauffeur, he leaned over and asked him, he says, what's the most important thing you've ever learned in the ministry? thinking he's going to get a real strong piece of wisdom. But this old fella had gotten burned a lot of times, and he gave this young man a piece of rather bad advice. He said, "I'll tell you, find out who's against you and get rid of them." There is no wisdom there. Do not write that down. Find out who's against you. So you see, just being a minister won't make you necessarily wise. This is a guy who had just forgotten Proverbs, you see. Oh, man. Acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. That's what he should have said. Get wisdom, young man. Get understanding. Bury yourself in the Word. That's what he should have said. But he didn't. I guess he didn't have a lot of wisdom at the time. Down through verse 9, he says, "She'll treat you right." You go after wisdom, she'll treat you right. "Hear, my son, accept my sayings," verse 10, "and the years of your life will be many. I've directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in upright paths. When you walk, your steps won't be impeded. If you run, you won't stumble. Take hold of instruction. Don't let go. Keep learning. Keep growing." Verse 16. "Speaking of evil people, they cannot sleep unless they do evil. They are robbed of sleep unless they make someone stumble. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the path of the dawn. It shines brighter and brighter until the full day. And the way of the wicked is darkness. They don't know what they stumble over." Which, by the way, is really true. If you've ever done counseling with folks who are not walking with God and their life has fallen apart, they don't know what they're stumbling over. They say, "I don't know what's wrong." And you look at them and you go, "You don't know what's wrong? Excuse me? You don't know what's wrong? How about this and this and this and this? Oh, that's just churches. Don't lay all that guilt on me, man. I want to do what I want to do." They don't know what they're stumbling over. They're stumbling from one place to another. They have no idea what it is. And you try and point it out and they say, I don't want to listen to that. Okay. Let me know when you're ready. Verse 20, "My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Don't let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart. They're life to those who find them." You see this repetition? Verse 23, "Watch over your heart with diligence. From it flow the springs of life." Watch what's going on in the inside of your heart. Is your heart bitter and angry and frustrated? Then watch out what's on the inside there. "Put away from you a deceitful mouth. Put devious lips far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead. Let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Turn your foot from evil." Chapter 5. Control your hormones. "My son, give attention to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion. Your lips may reserve knowledge." Now listen carefully, he says, "The lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. But in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, and her steps lay hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable, and she does not know it." Here he personifies immorality under the name of the adulteress. "Now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. And do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one, lest strangers be filled with your strength and your hard-earned goods go to the house of an alien. And you groan in your latter end, and your flesh and your body are consumed." He says, this is what will happen if you fall into this. And you say, "How I have hated instruction, and my heart spurned reproof. I wouldn't listen. I can't believe it." You'll be banging your head against the wall someday saying, "I wish I had listened." If you don't listen to me, he says, stay away from immorality. Verse 13, "You will say, I have not listened to the voice of my teachers or inclined my ear to my instructors. I was almost in utter ruin in the midst of the assembly of the congregation." Now that's interesting. "I was almost in utter ruin in the midst of the assembly of the congregation." Wait a minute, that's among God's own people. You mean you can ruin your life among God's own people with sexual immorality? Yes. Absolutely you can. You can trash your life that way and go to church every week. "Drink water from your own cistern," he says. "Fresh water from your own well." What do you think he's getting at? marriage. He's talking about sex. And he's talking about marriage. And he says, be happily married and keep the sex at home. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be yours alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth as a loving hind and a graceful doe. Let her breasts satisfy you at all times. Be intoxicated, the Hebrew word says, always with her love. You didn't think I was going to read that, did you? You know, God is not a prude. God is not a prude. He created sex. He says it's good. He says it's fun. He says you need to keep it at home because it will kill you. It will kill you if you give yourself over to it the way the world does it. That's what he's saying. It's interesting. He devotes a whole chapter to this in the life of a young man. And rightly so. Why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. Whoa, you're kidding me, man. It's just a little reminder that you can sneak away from everybody else, but you cannot sneak away from God. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he'll be held with the cords of his own sin. He'll die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he will go astray. God has a lot to say about sex. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to do Song of Solomon. That's part of the wisdom literature. I expect a good turnout during that particular study. Well, we're going to stop there this evening, and I want to give you some instruction before we close. How to ruin your life. Okay? How to really ruin your life, and I'm going to give you 7 ways, okay? Now, you can't edit this tape and just make it sound like I'm advising these things, okay? But I put it this way just to kind of make us think. How to ruin your life. You really want to ruin your life? You really want to screw up your life bad? So that in your older years, you're sick of yourself and you're banging your head against the wall and you're saying, I wish I had listened to people when I was younger. You really want to do that? Here's 7 ways to do it. Number 1, do not put the Lord first in your life. Always allow something else to be more important. I mean, you can have him in there, but if you let him be number 1, if you really let him change everything about you, well, you won't be able to ruin your life too well, see? So go ahead and pursue fulfillment in other things besides him. Do not put the Lord first in your life. Instruction number 2 to ruin your life. Do not take seriously parental warning and instruction. Don't listen to your parents. And of course, it means godly parents. You really want to screw up your life? Do not listen to older people, your parents, whoever. Just ignore them. Now, I'm not saying that parents are always right. And the older you get and the older they get, the more there is a reversal of roles. Because you become an adult, and sometimes in aged people become less mature for biological reasons. So, you know, there are limits. But especially when you are young, listening to the wisdom of your parents is vital. And listening to the wisdom of another generation is vital. Do not take seriously parental warnings and instruction. Just ignore your parents and never listen to their warnings. It'll help you screw your life up. Here's number 3. Do not give money to God's purposes. Always keep complete control of your money. Never trust God with it. Okay? Don't give it. Don't give it away. Don't share it with other people. Because if you do, you might not get a chance to screw your life up. Number 4, do hang out with people of marginal character, even when other people warn you about them. Okay? If other people say, you know, so-and-so is a real creepazoid, you shouldn't be hanging out with them. What you need to say is, well, you don't know them as well as I do. And then go ahead and hang out with them. Okay? Always hang out with marginal people. You want to really screw your life up? That's a good way to do it. Hang out with marginal people, even when other people warn you about them. And this doesn't mean witnessing to them, although some people do they say they're witnessing, they're really becoming buddies. This means becoming buddies, allowing someone else to really impact you, seriously. He says, you want to mess your life up? Hang out with people of marginal character. Number 5, do lean on your own understanding. Always take your own counsel and pretty much your own, only your own counsel, and always evaluate everybody else's advice by what you want rather than taking them seriously. You really want to screw your life up, always keep your own counsel and never listen to other people. Have unbounded confidence in your own wisdom and skill, and never allow people to correct you. And above all, along the same line, avoid the Lord's discipline and correction. If you feel that you're beginning to be convicted, you must resist that at all costs. Otherwise, you won't be able to screw your life up. Do lean on your own understanding. Number six, do reserve the right to lie when you really need to. Okay? That will screw your life up. And it's a really good way to screw your life up, but only when you need to. Okay, you got to lie in moderation. Do reserve the right to lie. Don't listen to God when He says, "Put deceitful lips away from you." And number seven, do get involved in sexual promiscuity. By all means, do that. If you really want to screw your life up bad, by all means, get involved sexually outside of marriage. Either before or after or during with somebody else. And you know, in the old days when this was written, the reason he personified sexual immorality with a woman who lived down the street was because that was the only place you could find sexual immorality, was in person. And now, through the advent of wonderful technologies such as the net and movies, you can actually involve yourself in horrible immorality and no one needs to know. So that you can look really good on the outside and your life can be completely rotting away on the inside. Isn't that wonderful? If you really want to screw your life up, that is a great way to do it. Got an email from a fellow not long ago about his own pastor who got hooked in net sex, pornography on the net. Lost the church, lost his family, and it's an increasing problem. Oh, you don't have to go very far to really goof your life up. And a lot of things that you wouldn't have looked at or wouldn't have been involved in years ago have become commonplace in the entertainment world. And it doesn't feel wrong when you get used to it. But the Lord says it still rots your life. It still rots your life. You want to goof your life up? Those seven easy steps. Don't put the Lord first. Don't take your parents seriously. Don't give your money to God's purposes. Do hang out with people of marginal character. Do lean on your own understanding. Do reserve the right to lie when you need to. And do get involved in sexual promiscuity. Do you notice that if you don't do anything with your thinking, you will do all of these things automatically? Did anybody notice that? That these are the automatic directions of the human soul. You don't have to raise your hand and agree, but it is true. And God says it's true. Which means the normal direction of the human soul is directly to the grave. God says, and that's why there's so much intensity in Proverbs, God says, you don't want to screw your life up. So change these things. Listen to me on these subjects. Let's bow our heads. Father, it seems that our lives in some ways are very fragile. Never more than one bad decision away from bankruptcy morally, ethically, spiritually. When we see the realities of this and we look into Proverbs and we see the intensity with which Proverbs is written and we look around at the carnage and the wreckage of lives in our own culture, perhaps even our own lives, Lord, we see the great difference between your wisdom and the world's folly. Teach us this wisdom, Lord. We know that rules and regulations and external restraints are not enough to channel our thoughts toward you. We must have your word written on our hearts. We must have our souls in your possession, be filled with your spirit. And we trust, Father, that you will accomplish that. We lift ourselves up to you for this kind of wisdom. And I lift up anyone among us this evening who, in reading through this with us this evening, suddenly was pierced at some point. And I pray that at that point, Lord, your grace would touch that person right now or those people. There'd be a healing and a turning away. That as they repent, your forgiveness will restore them. That your discipline will bring about brokenness and healing. That wisdom will be the result. Teach us, Father, these things. We thank you and we praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.